Good evening, everybody. James McKenna here with My Science Hour for October 20th, 2022, and tonight's topic will be education. Of course, in the ongoing year-long series of episodes dealing with the history of the discoveries of my work, but I spent a good portion of my life in formal education positions, teaching in the university, and also tutoring. And so education is something, and of course I've been on the student side of that, going through up through my advanced physics degree, nuclear and solid state physics. So education is something I'm very interested in. I also saw a decline because I'm a little bit older. I had a very strict education. It was a Catholic education, so I went to private schools all the way through college. And, also I was very strict on myself. And so that's something when I was studying physics, and I always tell people that, you have to be a little bit crazy to study physics, not only good at physics and mathematics, etc., but you have to be a little bit off kilter to spend that much time on something, because even somebody that, say, is good at golf, they don't spend that much time. We're talking night long hours, dreaming about physics problems and waking up in the morning with a solution. And so, but back to education, I have my education program, which I developed. I'll be talking about that tonight, where I take students and their parents. I first educate the parents, and I teach them the basics and what's wrong with the educational system. Anyway, I'll be talking about that tonight. But this is very important for historical reasons, because I want to describe the situation in education today. And, in 10 or 15 or 20 years, things may have morphed even to more devastating situations in education than what things are today. And now I also want to talk about my role in educating the public on all different topics, including some political and some topics that are rather hot buttons. And people appreciate my opinion. So when I'm on radio shows as a guest, I draw a big crowd. In fact, there are people that tell me that when I'm on the radio show, that's when they draw the biggest crowd. And they know that because there's agencies that test for the number of people listening to a show, etc. But a lot of what I do is educating the public. And not only about my science issues, but all kinds of other topics. Because, I also tell people that when you hear something from me, it's because I've studied it, I've been there, I've done it myself. It's not because I read it on somebody else's webpage. And a lot of times I have analysis that you will not find anyplace else. So, of course, my 22 years of my own radio show, and of course, having my own webpage, which I maintain myself. Yeah, I don't have a webmaster that I send things to. I maintain my webpage myself, so when there's content additions, etc., I do that. But one of my big roles, even with, say, if I'm selling a product, say it's a water filter product, I am educating people about the necessity and the methods of filtering water, what I've learned, and I impart that to other people, especially customers. So I talk to a lot of people, and people really appreciate what I do. So that's one of the reasons why I keep doing things. And of course, I certainly get a lot of flack. I get a lot of kickback from the establishment, or whatever you want to call it, because I'm flying in their face. They don't want independent people. They hate independent people. They despise them. And they also send out people to confront you and make your life miserable. So anyway, with that in mind, first of all, I want to talk about the education situation today in the United States and in the world. So let's go back in history a little bit. If you go back to tribal days, which are the days after the Great Flood, etc., and the word is that before the Great Flood, the Noah's Flood, the world was a bigger mess than it is today. That's all I can tell you. That's if that's even possible. But it was probably similar. You know, conflicting governments, petty wars, wars over resources. And the world was extremely populated, so you can imagine that, yes, the issues of resources were part and parcel to almost everything going on. You know, selfish people, self-ordained people, people in power who got there by crooked means and used crooked means to maintain it. You know, the whole gamut of everything going on today. And so education, I'm sure, was controlled at that point also. But then there's the Noah's Flood, and it literally wipes out, eradicates most of the human race. So just to be clear, now on my in my education package, which I'll be talking about in a little while, I go through this, and I also talk about this on my 18-hour MP3 lecture, 2-CD set, called The History of Planet X in Ancient Celestial Disasters. And I talk about the Moses event, and I talked about the Noah's event and what it was like. But literally, it was 40 days and 40 nights of torrential rain, and it was caused by Earth passing through the tail of a large comet. And this was probably around 5 to 6,000 years before the Moses event. And the best estimate that we have of the Moses event is around 1500 BC, and that's the Velikovsky date. I do not personally pick dates, but that's the best one that I can find, and the best reasoning, the best information. And of course, those things may change. Clearly, there was a pole shift, and it was in that time frame also, major one, and that's because Venus, the comet, large comet, came by Earth and came very close. So the gravitational wave caused the pole shift of Earth. That was the Moses event. But the Noah's event was not involving a pole shift. Certainly not a major one. It may have been very minor. But the end result was that by passing through the tail of a large comet, and for example, if I made an estimate when Hale-Bopp, the comet, was in the solar system, knowing the size of its tail, and knowing Earth's orbit, etc., it would have taken us about 40 days and 40 nights to pass through the tail of Hale-Bopp. So it makes perfect sense. And so not only water raining, but hydrocarbons, etc., but in the deluge of primarily water, the rest of the pollutants were not really noticed, but they did come in along as Earth simply passed through the tail of this comet. And so the entire Earth was inundated, and we know that the Earth's oceans rose by a few hundred feet. So all of this water just, you know, it just washed everything away. There's no force greater than running water. A dam that breaks with the water, it just clears out everything in its path. The tsunami that came into Madagascar about 10 years ago was the tsunami that began in the Sunda Strait off of Sumatra, and it devastated the Indian coast, and it took out a tremendous amount of vegetation on the coast of Madagascar. I talked about that, building coal, etc. And so the Noah's Flood wiped out the Earth's population. So after that, you had somewhat of a tribal communal existence for a long time. And the Old Testament is primarily a genealogical trail. That's what it is. That goes through something like 37 generations of children and children of Noah, etc. And then you come to Abraham, the Hebrew lines, the 12 tribes, etc. And those were the ones that were in existence when Moses was there. So the Earth's population had grown, Atlantis had grown up in, as a continent, as a worldwide power, and the North Pole of Earth at that time was in the area around Hudson's Bay. And so that's a topic that I helped work on, helped surveying, and now there's just a tremendous surge of information confirming that. The work by Mark Gaffney, friend of mine, and of course other people dealing with that same issue. And the Earth does not just jump up and do this by itself. It's a celestial event, a major celestial event. And so anyway, from Noah down to Moses, the world is just building up. It's just creating larger populations, etc. And so when Solon, the Greek, and many other Greeks went back to Egypt to study, they wanted to fill out their knowledge base, and they really didn't know where they came from. And so the Egyptian priest cults told them that, yes, they had existed through no less than five major earthwide catastrophes in the last 10,000 years. They talked about Atlantis coming and going, slipping into the ocean in the middle of the night. And it's very clear that Atlantis was probably not related to a comet passing. It was just a slewing event. Happens especially in volcanic regions. And of course, this was in the South China Sea. I've already identified that. And that is based on the great work of a Brazilian physicist who you can read the Atlantis to Tesla book to understand more about that. But anyway, back to education. Here are the Greeks, which we call the ancient Greeks. They're really the modern Greeks, because in terms of education, all of this history was maintained for thousands of years. And like I said, it could have been 2,000 years, it could have been 6,000 years, the Noah event before the Moses event. And so that gives us somewhat of a timeline, but people kept records. And we still have those records today, although they have been modified greatly to the point where people don't even believe in the Noah's flood or the Moses event. And that's where, of course, Velikovsky's tremendous great work comes in at identifying that. And that will be recognized internationally at some point, that Velikovsky was right, Carl Sagan was wrong. Carl Sagan did more damage to knowledge and the progression of knowledge than any person that I know of, that I can even imagine. And of course, that is the one of the points of today, is that is tier two science, and that's what they want to pawn off on the public. They want the public stupid, and these are the controllers, just like flat Earth, which is even being taught today, as absurd as it is. You can measure easily the circumference of the Earth and the diameter and the radius, and you can measure it. And I'm not going to go into that. There are online, there's 10 different methods of measuring the radius of the Earth, and you don't have to get up in an airplane to do it. It's very easy. Just like measuring the room that you're in, it's something that's measurable. It's not something to debate. And, and being on radio shows, I get this now and then, and I just tell people it's something you can measure. If you can measure with a tape measure the room that you're in, it's so many meters or feet or whatever, wide and long and tall, then you can measure the circumference and diameter of the Earth. Very simple. It's a measurement. It's not something to debate. But there again, they want this out there as a way to confuse people. And it's another indication that modern education is just a dearth of information, just nothing, just vacuous, because it opens the door for craziness to come in and exist. And it does not allow real science to come in and exist. So anyway, back to the Greeks, they started understanding where they were from. And so they put together a history. And then, of course, from the time Moses was around, we also have a history. But and then also the point was that Abraham was a starting point in which the old Bible is very rooted, let's just put it that way. And once again, it's a genealogy. It's a genealogy, and all of those people knew who their ancestors were. They were taught this. They did not have television. They didn't have radio. They didn't have video games. But they had a knowledge that was passed on from generation to generation. So when you got to Christ, he was a Hebrew. And these were, when they were in captivity, which is questionable if they were it was truly a captivity. But anyway, the Egyptians used the same techniques, monetary techniques of usury to create a bondage of the Hebrews. And that's why they were enslaved. And I'll be just very pointed here, and Velikovsky makes this very pointed also, that they were not Jews, they were Hebrews. They were Israelites. And so at any rate, and there again, that's why modern history is so distorted, because it's been so altered by groups of people who that's what they do, is they change history. But at any rate, and that's a problem today. A big problem today is a lot of what is being taught in schools could not possibly be true. It's not true. It's fake history. It's created history. And glorifying wars, etc., and all of the holidays glorifying wars, which were created wars to encapsulate and enslave man. Okay, so back to the time when the Moses event. And so the Moses was bringing the 12 tribes out of Egypt, and that whole story is well recorded. In fact, some people say, well, maybe it was a fairy tale, but they discovered Pharaoh's chariots in the bottom of the Red Sea. They discovered them. They're scattered all over there. So the story where the sea came back, parted, and the Israelites passed is all very true and is all very verifiable. And remember, then the Pharaoh with his chariots came into the Red Sea and chased the Israelites, and the ocean swished back. And this is all related to the tsunamis, related to the gravitational effects and the lightning effects. Remember the pillar of fire that reached up into the sky that Moses talked about, and it sat there overnight. It divided him from Pharaoh's armies, and then the Red Sea parted. All of these are comet effects, very explainable. The tornado reaching into the sky was the electrical discharge between the comet and Earth. And so all of these events were historical. But the important part is that they are taught as history. And we have records of all of this. Now, all of this was maintained. Now, these people eventually wandered in the desert for 40 years, they say. And I just want to be clear also, in these historical events, when you're studying history, they say 40. The number 40 historically was many. In other words, so many that you cannot remember back to when all of this began, whether it was 40 days and 40 nights of torrential rain for Noah, or 40 days and 40 nights in the desert for Jesus, or for Israelites wandering for 40 years in the desert. It was just a number. It was like their million. It was like a number too big to really understand. And so anyway, the history of this is recorded. And eventually those tribes, a lot of them stayed locally, but some made it up to the Caucasus Mountains, where the Caucasians. Now, these were white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed people, the Israelites. And they eventually made it up to Northern Europe, where then they moved north and populated the Scandinavia, the Norway, Sweden, and Finland, etc. And then the eastern part of those regions, which was Western Russia, the Caucasus. So that's why they call the white people Caucasians. That's where the name comes from. And, of course, Ireland. They populated Ireland. And so my personal ancestors were Vikings who came from Norway and populated the north and western bays of Ireland. And as they moved out, and they were potato farmers and fishermen. And so that's why my main diet today is potatoes and fish. It's part of, you know, and possibly that's where my archery interest came from also. But getting back to education, the Israelites kept records. And the great thing was that when the time of Christ, Joseph of Arimathea was Mary's uncle. He was a rich Roman businessman. He was noted as the go-between between England and Rome for metals. He was the metal man. It's literally what he was called. And so he was an extremely wealthy person in Rome, but he traveled into Israel, and of course that's where Mary was, his niece. And so she was not some pauper living off in a bungalow in the middle of nowhere. She was a quite well-off person, and just because of her relationship with Joseph of Arimathea. But Joseph of Arimathea also kept an extensive library. And this comes down to us as the Colbran. So the Colbran is literally, it's not a Bible. The Colbran is a collection of books of Joseph of Arimathea. That was his personal library. And after the death of Christ on the cross, the crucifixion, he took Mary and the Mary Magdalene and Mary, mother of Jesus, to England to establish a camp there. And it's alleged that he took the cross, he took the chalice of the Last Supper, the Holy Grail was what they called it, and other artifacts to England. And nobody has ever really found them, but the whole story of the Colbran, etc., I'm not going to go into that now, but it's one of the main history books that we have that is not tainted from that period of time. And so you find out that usury had been outlawed. It was against the law. And now we have world bankers who are the Jesuits running the World Bank out of the Vatican, and who became fabulously wealthy because of the raping and pillaging of the Americas, the Incas and Aztecs primarily, a little bit of wealth from the Maya, but primarily the Inca and Aztec vast amount of gold and other precious metals and stones, etc., which gave the basis for the modern Rothschild Empire. Shiploads of gold, which they're still sitting on. That's what gives them their power, so to speak. Okay, so anyway, back to education. We have these sets of books, and they were in the Old Testament, they were in the New Testament, but a lot of this got changed in the Middle Ages. A lot of this knowledge during the so-called Dark Ages, you had the Black Plague, you had people who isolated themselves because of the Black Plague, and these were the monasteries where you could not enter, you could not leave. And part of the reason was just medical. If you let somebody in that had the Black Plague, everybody was going to die. And so you just simply could not let anybody in, and if somebody left, they just could never come back. And so that you had these cloistered groups, but they maintained the Bibles. And what they did is they copied them by hand. That was part of their job as a monk, is to copy the Bible to produce new copies. But in doing so, they also changed things and watered it down. And the real stories in the Bible got watered down. And this was the Noah's flood and the Moses event, because they were physical events. They were physical events. And of course, in the modern Bible, this is all lost. It's completely lost, and it's not taught in the schools. I had a friend of mine's wife was a honors teacher in history. So this would have been high school honors history course, and in Florida. And so this would be the allegedly the epitome of education in the United States. And, so because Florida is deemed to have a very good advanced educational system. And so I picked up the history book and I went to the very beginning and I said, "Where's the part about the Great Flood?" She goes, "Oh, we don't teach that. That's just fairy tale. We don't teach that." I'm like, wow. One of the most important formative events in the history of man, and they decided not to teach it. It doesn't count. It's not there. Relative to the Moses event. That's just like a fairy tale to them. And so real history has been squelched. And so if you don't know who you are, you don't know your true history, then you're not going to have a very good time at very easy time at forming a future. And of course, these historical events were caused by comets. And so if you don't know that your future could be cut short because of a passing comet, then you really don't know much. Okay, so back to the ancient Greeks now. The ancient Greeks lived through the Moses event, the Venus event, and the people who survived were sheep herders up in the mountains. And this is part of the history, and the Greeks really didn't know their own history, so that's why they went back to Egypt, where the priest cults of Egypt had kept records for over 10,000 years. Okay, so now you have the ancient Greeks starting to put together the government, the republican form of government, where people would vote, there was a Congress, people could debate, and then they formed an educational system for the youth. And some were a little harsher than the other. The Spartans, for example, had an extremely difficult life because it was based on the fact that they would have to be warriors to defend their land. And just ferocious warriors. They had battle techniques where they were like a buzzsaw, and they would protect each other. They fought in pairs with their arms linked together. Two men would have their arms literally linked together and would be covering each other's backs. And so you couldn't get near these people. They were with a sword, they could fight all day and all night and keep going. You know, and there's the tremendous the story that there's a movie called 300 about the 300 Spartans who defended, I think it's, I can't remember the name, Thermopylae, I think is the name. I may be pronouncing that wrong. But a pass where the legions of Xerxes were coming through, literally hundreds of thousands of troops, and they were just going to wipe out the Spartans, and they defended this for days until reserves were able to come, but they killed tens of thousands of Xerxes' armies defending this pass. But anyway, that was their educational system, and it was a fierce one, where the youth had to become just, you know, barbarous gladiators. But the main Greek societies were warring. You had Carthage, and you had the Greeks, the ancient Greeks, etc. But they developed a very high level of architecture, of education, and of government. And in the education, they believed in the complete person, something that's totally lost today. If you look at youth coming out of high schools, they're overweight. In fact, my friend John Moore, who has a radio show, he's a Green Beret and is, of course, very familiar with military, gives a statistic that the majority of youth today in the United States cannot enter the military because they're simply overweight and out of shape. They're so out of shape and so overweight that they cannot even be admitted. There's nothing they could do with them in a military program. And today the United States has a voluntary military. It's not the draft like when I was in college, for example. But even if these people wanted to be in the military, they couldn't because of just being overweight, out of shape. And so it's completely contrary to the concept of the Greeks, where you developed the mind, you developed the personality, you developed physically, and that's where the Olympics came from. The original, I think there were 12 Olympic Games, discus throwing, shot put, running, of course, and the triathlon, where you would have three different sports. And then the original Olympics, and now everything in the world is Olympics, Olympic Games, etc. You have basketball being an Olympic game. But be that as it may, it's like everything modern seems to distort the original. It'd be fun to go back to the original Olympics and have the original Olympics as an event. And of course, it was held every 4 years. But the point is, it was part of their education to be the complete person. And it's something that's totally lost. And it included the spirit, something that is totally lost today. Kids today have no idea. They think they're just a little bit smarter monkey than the one out there in the jungle. So through the Middle Ages, now let's go from the time of Moses up to the time of Christ, there was very little formal education except for the ruling class. And that's why Christ, for example, got a private education from his great uncle, Joseph of Arimathea, and they traveled. Christ was in England. There are reports that he was in India. Of course, he was in the Mideast, in the Eastern Mediterranean. But he was all over the place as a young kid. He went back. Remember, they had to leave, and Mary and Joseph took him to Egypt for a period of time when he was young to avoid the mass slaughter of youth, because they were hunting for this alleged Messiah and killing all the firstborn boys because they were looking for him. So they went to Egypt, and he got quite an education. But remember, there was a time when they went to the temple. It was a weekend retreat. Mary was in one place, and Joseph was in the other. And they each thought that Jesus was with the other one. And they came back together, and they said, well, where's the kid? And they go, I don't know. I thought he was with you. Well, no, I thought he was with you. No. So they started looking around, and here he is in the temple. And the priest cults that were in Egypt were there, and Christ was teaching them. And they go, where does this kid get all this information? This kid is teaching us, you know, and he was instructing these scribes, who were the people who kept the old knowledge in Egypt, and Christ was teaching them. So that just gives you an idea. So Christ was a well-educated young man, much more than the average person of the day had no education. So they were living, you know, out in rural areas or becoming soldiers and gladiators or whatever in the Roman day. But education was for a small ruling class. And of course, that is the model of the political permanent ruling class, is education for them, keep everybody in the dirt. That's why there is tier two science today. That's the bogus science. That's the garbage science that they pawn off on the public. Plus YouTube, etc., filled with just garbage, just plain garbage, especially when it comes to so-called science. And people go there, and that's their source of information. So they're totally... I have people coming up to me all the time asking me about things, and it's just off-the-wall things that they saw on YouTube. But why do they let that exist? Because it confuses the public. If you throw a tremendous amount of misinformation, how are the people in the public going to sort it out? That's why I do not post on YouTube. I do not post on YouTube because it's just a sea of disinformation, and you just get lost there. And I've already talked about YouTube, and I've talked about Wikipedia being the same thing. It's just a field. It's just an ocean of garbage and misinformation and slandering people and taking people who are good, mixing them with people who are disinformation agents and people who are... this is the other thing that is used commonly in disinformation. Is I just call them street people. It's like, for example, the CIA drug program. They need street people to interface to sell the drugs to the people on the street. So that's literally what they are. So they incorporate street people, and then they also use that. Then they create a government program, like Nancy Reagan is here saying no more drugs for kids, and her George Bush Sr. is the vice president at the time, running the biggest drug operation that the country has ever seen. And then, of course, they use the agencies to arrest their competition and make sure that they are the only ones that are selling drugs. And so that's the level of corruption and, you know, the destruction of youth using drugs and then filling them full of complete misinformation. Okay, and I'll go back and fill in some pieces of history here. Around the turn of the 1900s, a man named Cecil Rhodes, there were other people, the Dewey Decimal System, etc., and there were two people named Dewey. So you have to. There was the Dewey Decimal System, and then there was another one who was instrumental in education, who set up the modern educational system and was designed to control. This is the same time that they brought in the World Bank into the Federal Reserve, created the fiat money for the United States based on loans from European banks, removed Congress, removed their congressional mandate, their constitutional mandate to create the money for the United States, and based on a gold standard, etc. And eventually the gold standard was completely dropped, but it really ended in 1913 when this was all organized. But along with it was education. There's a document that talks specifically about education. And it's a secret document. It first appeared in around 1954, but it said that they were going to go after logic, science, and mathematics, so that the students would not, this is when new math finally was brought in. I had basically a good education, but it was somewhat corrupted, but out of it, I was still able to put things together because I was very good at math, but my friends had a very difficult time with mathematics because of the way it was taught. And this was on purpose. Anybody should be able to learn and understand mathematics, but the way it's taught, I remember going into schools to help students, sometimes grade school students, and then I had tutoring of high school and college level students. And what I did is I had to undo their bad training so that they understood simple things like arithmetic. Okay, back to Cecil Rhodes. He created what are known as Rhodes Scholars. And the entire thesis of what he was doing, and this is public information, you can read it online, what he was doing is he was plucking out certain people, and these were part of the political ruling class, the kids. They were coming up through school, and sometimes it's hard to identify why they are there. For example, Bill Clinton was supposedly almost an orphan. His mother raised him. But it turns out that Bill Clinton was the son of one of the Rockefellers, who was an illegitimate kid. But that's why Billy Clinton then was plucked up and put into Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar. And many people in Washington, over 7,000 people have been educated as Rhodes Scholars in Oxford, in England, but from the United States. And what they're told is to go back, and their goal is to destroy the United States. The entire goal is to bring the United States back under the British crown. That's the stated goal of the Rhodes programs, Rhodes Scholars. And so there's over 7,000 of them now operating in the U.S. government. And so the United States, for the banking system, everything else has been basically under the watchful eye of these Rhodes Scholars. And they're also told that they can do whatever they want, and the court system will cover them. That's why you find these people doing all kinds of horrendous acts and never being prosecuted. And that's what they were told, because they're part of the program. And this is the English court system, etc. In the United States, the bar, the marine law, etc., that came in from England. Okay, so I'm not going to go into all of that, but the back to education, the idea is that there is the permanent ruling class. Their education is totally different than what they pawn off on the public. So you have No Child Left Behind and Common Core education, which is meant to standardize education so all the students think the same thing. And you cannot teach anything. If you're a high school or a grade school or even kindergarten teacher, you cannot teach anything that is not in the given curriculum. You do not write your curriculum anymore. It is given to you the textbooks are given to you, and that's what you have to teach. So anyway, that's the state of education today. And I could go on and on about the Middle Ages and the monasteries and the fact that the general public has had to fend for themselves in a sense. And then you have public education coming in, which is funded by real estate, interestingly enough, something that should never, ever have been coupled together. And then the teachers' unions and the school boards, who are elected people who have really an agenda that is handed down to them. So at the local level, when you get to the school or the mayor or the city council, these people are also taken aside in a sense and given an education. They're part of the system. They get paid under the table in most cases, in with a lot of benefits, because what they do is they promote this programmed educational system. Now, the way public schools are paid is through real estate taxes. About 50% of the taxes on real estate go to fund the schools. And that's why there's certain communities that say there cannot be any kids there. They're adult communities or they're seniors communities, etc., because they don't want to pay for these schools in their property taxes. So they simply form a community where there are no schools. But the funding via real estate taxation is a very bad system. Because as with anything, you get these power groups in place, and then the public is trapped. The public has no say, and the money is automatically taken from them to pay for the schools. And then some people may say, well, they go to private schools. The problem is this thing called accreditation. And I've talked about this many times on radio shows, that the issue with accreditation is, to be a private school, you have to be accredited by the same school systems as the public school. So you have to use the same textbooks, the same curriculum, and they force the private schools to basically step in lockstep with the public schools. So even though you're in a private school, even though you homeschool, you still have to use this set of books that are primed to keep the public stupid. And that's the whole idea of the new math. It doesn't make any sense. There's no logic to it, and that's part of the program, to keep the youth stupid so they cannot reason. So they don't. The mathematics is just a set of facts that you memorize, and that's not really the way it is. I was able to break through this because I was a very good student, and I really hit the classroom before all of this happened. I went back to my college professors one time for a visit, and I walked in and talked to them, and I said, how's it going? They said, wow, you were the last group of students that were really, truly physics students. And what happened is the college was, their decision was that they were spending too much money on the physics department per student, because there were, like in my class, there were 9 students. In my class was the big one. There were like 6 students before that. And the physics department had the biggest budget of all the departments in the school. And so they didn't like that. So they wanted to make economic sense out of this. And so what they did is they said, oh, we'll let you have more students, but you have to go by the bell curve. In other words, always people will pass, no matter how good they were. And when I entered my freshman year physics, this is St. Mary's College at the time, now it's St. Mary's University, but there were 44 students there, all who believed they were going to be physics majors. And the instructor came in and he said, look around. He said, by the end of this semester, there'll be less than 10 of you left. And we looked around kind of like, wow. And that's what happened week after week after week, test after test. Some would drop out and drop out and drop out. And by the end of that first semester, there were 9 left. And all 9 of us graduated. All 9 of us went on to graduate school. But they had very tough tests, and if you didn't pass a test, you didn't pass a test. There was no bell curve. A bell curve means that, say, the top person got 60% on the test. Well, that would be the A. And the way they worked with our group was that you know, 93 to 100 was an A, 87 to 93 was a B. So the A in the new system, in the bell curve system, would have been a flunking grade before. So at any rate, these people at my college were telling me this, that this was the state. And the reason for this, of course, was the college wanted to make money. They wanted to make it profitable. All the departments have to be profitable. And one department, like the physics department, could not leverage off the profits of other departments. These colleges have big endowments, big amounts of money. And instead of producing a very high-quality physics group, that went down. There are other factors here, and I'm going to go through all of these as an indication that education in general just went down the tubes. Teachers' unions have had a tremendous effect on high schools. They tried to get teachers' unions into universities, but thank goodness they didn't let them in. Universities have their own set of problems with woke cultures. Now, let me talk about another issue that's happened. And let me just remind you that the reason I'm giving all of this discussion here is because I'm leading up to my education program and why I did it and how I targeted my subjects and my subject matter and the approach to my education package. But anyway, the Catholic Church has been very powerful in education throughout the Middle Ages, etc. And they literally have now taken over all of the colleges and universities in the United States, except for a very few. And if they haven't taken them over, they've taken over the, say, the textbook industry and the materials that are so-called standard fare for a university or college to meet. There again, you have that magic word accreditation. If you want to be accredited, then you have to meet certain metas, certain goals. And so anyway, the Jesuits have taken over so many universities, the Ivy League universities, etc. And there's some really amazing statistics that happen with the, especially the Ivy League schools and the big California schools, that the high percentage of students are Jewish. And so if you're Christian or if you're basically culture or a social segment of society, then you have a very small chance of getting into these schools. And it's, and you're wondering, well, the Jesuits are Catholics. Well, not really. You have to understand that the Jewish communities back in the Middle Ages through the Jesuits took over the Catholic Church, and they converted to Catholicism from Jews. This happened in Spain. And these are just historical facts. And one might think, in today's world, if you mention the word Jew, it means you're anti-Semitic. No, it just means you're quoting facts and essential information, because you have to understand what's going on and what's taking over the educational system. I've already talked about the document that is a warfare pact against education, and they want to destroy logic. They want to destroy the students' ability to reason. And so also this goes along with something called Google Education. When COVID came in, it was just amazing timing, but Google, which is owned by the CIA, came in with an entire worldwide education program for remote learning. And so the issue here is that just like Common Core in the United States or No Child Left Behind, they want to standardize everything so everybody learns the same thing. And this is very top-down, and it all sounds wonderful on the surface. But when you take the teacher in the classroom ability away from them to teach the subjects they want and talk about the things they want, and then through the curriculum, which is mandated, and then also you have this issue where parents are suing schools and say, well, little Johnny came home and the teacher talked about something that was not in the syllabus, in the course program, and they object, and then they sue the school. So the schools are walking around afraid to death of lawsuits. And so they only allow teachers to teach what's in the syllabus. So that's why there can be no progress in understanding. And when new work comes along, and that replaces old knowledge, there's no room for it to break in. There's no place for it. And so everything has stagnated over the past 50 years in education. When the Pilgrims first came to the United States, what was to become the United States, when the Pilgrims first came, the very first thing they did is they created a school because they needed the kids, babysitting, and sometimes I call college advanced babysitting, because the students go off to college, mom and dad sacrifice the mortgage on their house so that the kids get a good college education. And what happens, it's really advanced babysitting is what it's become, unfortunately. But I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But the Pilgrims created schools, and then they had a school teacher who came in. Well, sometimes that teacher had many grades, just like the old rural school. When I was a kid, some of my friends who came from rural communities had a country school, a little country schoolhouse that the community got together and built and, provided the heating, etc. And it was a communal school. But the teacher had to be, first, second, third, fourth, fifth grade, and then you might have another teacher. But once they got into, say, fifth grade, then they started busing them to the public schools, or they could also go to a private school if the parents were able to pay the money. The issue of rising cost of college education. When I went to college, my college tuition in the 1960s was $1,200 a year. That was the tuition. My room and board was another $1,200. And what I had was a full ride, a complete full scholarship. So that paid for my tuition. And then I had a matching government grant that came from John Kennedy's program of student grants, etc., which they eventually did away with. So because of good grades, and I know people who lost their scholarship because they goofed around, they got bad grades, and they lost it. But I kept mine for the entire 4 years. And so basically all of my basic costs, my room and board and my tuition, were paid. I had to buy my own textbooks, and I had to have my own spending money. So in the summer times, I would work a job. Sometimes I went to Chicago to work in a factory, would walk 20 blocks in the middle of the night to the factory and back from the factory. A friend of mine's dad worked in a factory and was able to get me a job. And my job, by the way, was they were baking labels on steel, primarily steel, cans, and this big oven. These plates would come in, and the plates were like maybe 4 feet tall and 6 feet wide, and you'd have big asbestos gloves on, and you'd stick your hand in between, and between your fingers you were able to grab four plates at a time, bring them out, and then support them with the left hand and slap them down on a big dolly, which there were people that came and got those. Then they went off to be made into cans. The company was called American Can Company, and I don't know if it's still there. But the steel can business was big business. And this company, the lines that I worked on, created the printing on the steel sheets. Okay, so at any rate, that's how I earned money. And then I was also in a couple bands. I was in the college stage band. This was the Woody Herman 16-piece stage band type of band. And we would go on tours, and we'd make a little bit of money on those tours. But I also was in a group with a piano, bass, drums. I played the bass, the string bass, and I made a lot of money doing that. And then I would work with other groups, musical groups, etc. And so I always had a little suitcase in my dorm room where I kept my money. Because I didn't have really a bank account at the time, so it was all, cash. And so they would, but that's how I earned my way through college. As I had a good grades, kept my scholarship and my grant, that matching grant, and then just spending money that I needed, etc. And so that was it. And so now what happened is, after I got out of college, what happened is the colleges realized that the student loan program came in, and this was government-backed, but the mom and dad had to sign off on typically the home mortgage, because by the time Junior and Sis got old enough to go to college, mom and dad had quite a bit paid off on the family house, and they were willing to sign off on an equity loan to send the kids to college, which put them back to ground zero. But when the colleges learned this, they thought, wow, mom and dad are willing to sign off on this, and they raised their prices. And all of a sudden, the prices of college went exponential, went through the roof. And because of the student loan program, it kind of backfired. And so now colleges are horrendously expensive. But that's another factor. And, of course, that diminished that increased the ability of kids to go to college. Now they want all kids to be able to go to college. And that sounds like a great thing on the surface. But now you're going to have people with degrees that really should have never gotten degrees. And you're going to have the professional student. This has already been tried in places like Norway and Sweden and Finland. And what they get are 36-year-old professional students that just keep going to school and living in grandma's basement, basically, with a little bit of an endowment. And you get professional students that are never trained in anything and then get degree after degree after degree. So it really doesn't work. And so when the COVID thing came around, then you had online learning, etc. And then another thing that happened was the teacher education programs, where the teachers, this happened after I got out of college, this became a big thing, where teachers had to have, for high school education, they had to have a teacher education certificate. And then once again, they tried to do this in universities and it didn't wash. But the teacher education certificate, what happened is that the people that couldn't make the grade in math or science or physics, they'd say, well, why don't you become a teacher? And so the people who really couldn't make the grade became the teachers because of the teacher certificate issue. Then they could go teach in a college. And then the people who could make the grade could not teach in a high school because they didn't have the teacher education credit, because that took up half of your college career, just getting the teacher education credit. So anyway, the reason I'm going through this is to prime you for why I'm doing my education project. It took 4 years in the making, and I'll talk about that next week. Once again, remember my webpage is jmccwaterfilters.com and jmccsci.com. And remember, that's the way I make income to pay for this commercial-free show, no sponsors, etc. Once again, this is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.